pyromaniac ghost, gambling, prostitution, murder, and blood running down curtains on the same day as one of the most tragic events in U.S. history unfolded. For decades, families moved in and out of the old Cahill Mansion near Gulfport, Mississippi. The owners may have changed, but one thing never did. There are always restless spirits awaiting the new occupants. This is the story of Cahill Mansion. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight, and I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right. All right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. A majestic home known as the old Cahill Mansion once stood in a community known as Hansborough near the Mississippi Gulf Coast town of Gulfport. The three-story wood frame mansion was built by William Stewart in 1915 and featured an enclosed outside porch that ran along the second floor by the bedrooms. The large estate was full of beautiful trees and flowers that you would see as you explored the property and walked the backyard that overlooked the beautiful Bayou Bernard. For the next 30 years, the home was owned by a few different families, including the Cahill family. The Cahill's name has remained associated with the home, but the family didn't live there long and certainly didn't have the stories to tell about this home that future owners would have. In 1941, the house was leased to the Air Force and was used as a non-commissioned officer's club during World War II. A sergeant assigned to manage the club moved gambling equipment into the master bedroom and brought in prostitutes from New Orleans to, as he put it, spice things up. Eventually, his superiors heard about what he was doing and they shut down the club, but the sergeant wasn't done with Cahill Mansion. When the war ended, the sergeant, made his way back to the mansion, climbed the stairs to the second floor, and opened the window seat in the master bedroom to find a large amount of valuable savings bonds he had stashed there until he could return to collect them. As you learn more about Cahill Mansion, you can't help but wonder how the sergeant felt as he entered the abandoned club in the mansion that night. He was up to no good, but did he hear noises that made him paranoid? Screams or grating sounds that had unnerved previous owners? Did he walk through mysterious cold spots in the house that made him wonder if someone was watching him? Well, years passed, and by 1957, the Cahill Mansion had new owners, Dr. and Mrs. Kendall Gregory. The Gregorys moved their large family into this home that was, by now, a fixer-upper. The old majestic house needed some TLC, and the Gregory family needed a large home for their family. When the Gregorys moved into Cahill Mansion, they discovered something unexpected. They discovered they would be sharing the home with spirits, three regular and active ghosts. At first, Dr. and Mrs. Gregory ignored their children, who kept telling them of strange experiences in the home. Children, after all, do have vivid imaginations. But not long after they moved in, the Gregory's five-year-old entered his parents' bedroom, woke up his parents, and told them there were strange sounds in his room. The Gregory's instructed him to go back to bed. Their son came back once again that night and said there was someone walking around his room. They told one of their older sons to spend the night in the five-year-old's room, and within a few hours, their older son entered their room to tell his parents it wasn't his brother's imagination. There was someone or something walking across the room and closing and opening and closing the closet door. The Gregorys would soon have personal experiences that turned these two skeptics into believers. One of Dr. Gregory's first personal experiences with the otherworldly members of his household was on a November night when he was awakened from a deep sleep He heard a loud moan from somewhere in his room. He got out of bed, turned on the lights, and saw no one in the room. His children came running into the room to inquire about the moaning sound because it had woken them up too. Somehow, Mrs. Gregory slept through the sounds that night. But the spirit seemed to think it needed to balance things out. The next night, the spirit treated Mrs. Gregory to loud sounds as she was awakened from her deep sleep to hear what she would later describe as an indescribable bubbly moan, a horrible, hideous sound as if someone was in unbearable agony. The hideous sound only lasted about 15 seconds, but Mrs. Gregory said it felt like it would never end. The Gregory's bedroom ghost seemed particularly interested in Mrs. Gregory. A few nights later, she was in bed and turned over to see the apparition of a large man standing at the foot of her bed. The man was floating 2 feet off the floor and was wearing a brown plaid sport coat, dark brown pants, and a white shirt. She couldn't see his face, but he had his chin in the palm of his right hand, and he was staring intensely at Mrs. Gregory. Another night, the Gregories were both shaken out of bed by a loud pounding on their headboard. Their bed was an 1800s New Orleans Mallard, a half-tester canopy bed, a rare and valuable piece of furniture with a headboard that stood 9 feet high on large mahogany legs. The posts at the foot of the bed are 9 feet tall. It was an incredibly heavy piece of furniture, so you can imagine the force that it would take to jolt the bed hard enough that it would wake up two people in the middle of the night. The Gregories were concerned. They checked their room. They found nothing and went back to bed. But Mrs. Gregory, in bed that night, was so unnerved she was unable to sleep. Within an hour, she heard a sharp clicking and a screeching sound. She would later describe it as someone clicking and dragging their long fingernails against the headboard. The Gregories, well, they were convinced the man, this spirit in their bedroom, was connected to the 1940s gambling operation that the Air Force sergeant had run out of the master bedroom. The Gregory children were not free of haunting experiences for long. One of their children, Kendall, woke up one night to the sight of a fluorescent figure walking around his bed. The figure came closer and looked him right in the face. And the young boy recognized that the figure was that of a young boy. Understandably, the children felt scared, and Kendall's younger sister decided to sleep in his room that night. That's when she saw the closet door open and a figure of a glowing light moving in and out of the closet. She woke up later in the night, around 2 a.m., and once again saw this bright fluorescent figure walk out of the closet straight to her bed. She watched as the apparition went through her feet to the other side of the bed. The figure that was burning bright as heat sent chills up her legs. It stood against the wall and then studied her for a moment. And when it was done looking at this young girl, it moved through her feet again and vanished, leaving the young girl cold and frightened. A few nights later, another Gregory child, Ricky, was sleeping in Kendall's room and woke up to see an apparition of a woman in a gown floating near the ceiling. When Ricky returned to sleep in his own room, he was awakened by the sound of the drawers of his bureau opening and closing again and again. No one was in the room, at least no one that he could see that night, but he felt an eerie presence. Greer, another Gregory child, had four friends stay over one night. Early in the morning, they were in the living room when they heard strange sounds. They realized the sounds were coming from the northeast corner of the den. They heard 1920s era jazz, talking and laughing, but when they went to investigate, they saw no apparitions. They only heard the sounds of the party that they weren't invited to that night. Greer would have many more experiences with apparitions in the home, including seeing a detailed figure of a little girl with curly hair, just like Shirley Temple. He watched her walk through the den and then walk through, literally through the door of the den, and disappear. And in 1965, Greer was asleep on the couch in the den when he woke up to the sound of a door closing. He looked up to see a boy, around 14 years old, coming through the door of the den. Again, walking through the door, not opening it. The figure of the boy walked across the room and disappeared into the bookcase. These sights, sounds, and strange experiences continued to happen with each year the family lived in the home and seemed to become more intense with each passing year. And the spirits, well, they led to the family having a hard time keeping good help around. Their cook and their housekeeper, Mrs. Peters, was alone in the house one day when she saw a tall, balding man wearing gray clothes. She watched as he walked into the den. She was scared, startled, but she ran into the den to confront the man, only to see no one there. She checked the house and never found that man. A maid named Susan was folding laundry in the kitchen one morning when she saw the apparition of a man who was described as being short, having a dark complexion, and very sharp features. The man stared intently at Susan. To her relief, the apparition walked away and went up the stairs. The maid would later describe the spirit to Mrs. Gregory, who told her it sounded as though the maid had come face to face with the old sergeant that had operated the gambling and prostitution ring out of the home when it had been leased to the Air Force. Even those who didn't live and work in the home would see strange things when they visited the Gregorys. One of Mrs. Gregory's friends, Anne, was visiting one day when she walked into the kitchen. As she entered, she saw a young boy in the kitchen who appeared to be about 14 years old, and she scolded the boy for listening to a conversation Mrs. Gregory was having on the phone. She told him he shouldn't be eavesdropping. The boy stared back at her and then vanished from the room. A terrified Anne asked Mrs. Gregory why she hadn't seen the boy. Mrs. Gregory showed Anne a school picture of the son of the lady that the Gregorys had bought the house from and said that the photo was of the boy she had seen in the kitchen. And to her horror, Anne listened as Mrs. Gregory explained that this boy had been killed in a tragic tractor accident on the property many years before. The family, workers in the home, and family friends continued to experience eerie things in the home, from hearing disembodied voices calling out their names to seeing objects move without explanation. Mrs. Gregory once said that the supernatural activity could get so active that she would be forced to wear earplugs to muffle the strange noises. And little incidents kept happening with fire. Mrs. Gregory reported that she and her son walked into his bedroom one afternoon and found his school jacket laying across his bed. The jacket burst into flames and was partially destroyed before he could put out the fire. And Mrs. Gregory, who had been shopping one day, came home, entered the kitchen, opened a cabinet, and saw a little red candle burning. She blew out the candle and immediately looked for her maid and accused her maid of trying to burn the house down. The maid said she had found the candle earlier in the same location and had blown it out and put it in the sink to be on the safe side. But the strangest and most terrifying experience for this family unfolded on the same day the United States faced one of the most shocking tragedies in American history. November 22, 1963, the day the nation faced the reality that President John F. Kennedy had been assassinated. The tragedy would unfold and news would begin to spread across the country after 1 p.m. that day. But that morning, the spirits of the old Cahill house seemed to leave the Gregory family a warning that something tragic was coming. Mrs. Gregory would later speak to a reporter from the Daily Herald Sun and share what happened. She explained, "My children awoke in the morning to see what appeared to be blood dripping down their draperies and smeared on the window pane. None of us in the home had an injury. Dr. Gregory took samples of the substance and examined them at his office. It was type Rh positive human blood. Imagine the Gregory's horror when they heard the news of the Kennedy assassination hours later. Before long, the doctor and his wife took their family and left the Cahill house. Those who knew the story of all that had happened inside the Cahill house were intrigued and wanted to get inside to see if they would have their own paranormal experiences. In 1969, Dr. David Buber was given permission to conduct a seance at the home. Dr. Buber was a Baptist minister from Tennessee who claimed he had psychic powers. During the seance, 20 witnesses were present when Buber claimed to have spoken with the spirit of a girl named Flossie. Buber said Flossie seemed scared and told him that she had been forced into prostitution and was murdered in this home, telling Buber that her body was full of holes. Buber claimed that more spirits had supposedly been murdered when the house served as the military's officers' club during World War II, including some of the girls that had been brought in from New Orleans. A reporter from the local newspaper was a witness during the seance and said that he witnessed the table they were using move according to instructions from Dr. Buber. Then the table bumped, rocked, and moved several feet across the floor. The night ended with Dr. Buber proclaiming that this house and the spirits of all evil things that had happened in the Cahill home would go up in flames someday. On July 19, 1970, the headline of the local Daily Herald read, "Cahill House Destroyed by Fire, Spirits Free?" Writer Nancy Cable filed this story about the fire. A haunting legend blazed into history Saturday afternoon when the three-story Kendall Gregory home in Hansboro erupted into flames that rapidly licked away a once glorious home, at the same time fulfilling a prediction made 9 months ago that the house will be destroyed by fire. Dr. David Buber made the prediction when he visited here in mid-December to conduct an investigation into the unknown at the home, known locally as the Cahill House. During this psychic investigation, attended by about 20 persons, Buber entered a trance and purportedly revealed much of the history of the old wood frame mansion built in 1915 on a site overlooking Bayou Bernard. In a voice not typical of his own and in first person, as though the spirits were themselves speaking, Buber related sordid occurrences and told of the prediction of destruction by fire. The prediction came from a so-called spirit identified as Flossie. Regarding one of the instances where a candle was found burning under unexplained circumstances, Flossie said, "There were candles in the kitchen. I mean to burn the place up. I have to get rid of this place." In a telephone interview with him on Saturday afternoon, as the shell of the house smoldered, Buber commented, "I am delighted that place burned down, as it will release some of those unfortunate entities that have been trapped there." A few years later, in 1975, the Daily Herald would cover another big news story that involved Dr. Buber. He was found guilty on 4 federal charges connected with a fire that destroyed a rubber products plant in Connecticut. He had predicted a fire and explosion would flatten that plant where he had once worked. The Gregory family had always felt that once the Cahill house was gone, the restless spirits would finally be able to cross to the other side. Following the fire, the property was sold and new homes were built on the land. They blended into the landscape of the area. The Gregorys hoped those restless spirits had found rest. But parapsychologists say restless spirits don't always leave once a structure is gone. Sometimes those spirits hang around and haunt new structures. Maybe those same spirits are convincing residents of those new homes that there is an unseen world that can touch one's everyday existence. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. I'd like to say a special thanks to Lindsay, the co-host of the Corpus Delicti podcast. She's from Mississippi and reached out months ago to suggest I share the story of Cahill House here on Southern Mysteries. I'm always open to ideas and would love to hear your suggestions. You can email those to southernmysteriespodcast@gmail.com or share your ideas via the Southern Mysteries Facebook page. If you'd like to read more about the Cahill Mansion, read Ghost Around the House by Susie Smith. She was given permission to investigate Cahill House for her book, and her detailed accounts of the manifestations the family experienced when they lived in the home were invaluable in telling this story. You'll find a link to information about her book in the show notes for this episode. Remember to subscribe to Southern Mysteries via iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and the new Google Podcast app or your preferred podcast player. When you subscribe, you'll never miss a new episode of Southern Mysteries. And I did want to take a moment and say a special thanks to you for listening and sharing your reviews and your feedback about Southern Mysteries on iTunes and on Facebook and Twitter. You're the reason I share these stories, and I'll keep sharing them for as long as you're willing to listen.
It'll be all right. We're careful what we-